GM everyone, let's kick start. Let's start with introductions. If you can introduce yourself and then, you know, the respective team that you guys are part of building. And then from there, we'll start with the Q&A.
Of course. Thanks for having me on. I think just a quick kind of intro here. Been working in the crypto space for quite a bit. Was one of the first employees at Polygon. Been, you know, kind of working on the scaling problem. Now, one of the founders here at Socket. Socket's a cross-sell to Interop protocol. We power actually a lot of optimism protocols today. I think 7 out of 10 use Socket to, you know, kind of pull liquidity and users and assets from other chains. Yeah, I think that's a quick one.
Great. I can follow on that. Hi, everybody. I'm Eric Brown. I'm the co-founder and CEO at Franklin. I've been in the crypto space since 2017 and have been working in it more full-time with starting Franklin. Franklin is we're a modern payroll provider, so we make it easy to compliantly pay U.S. employees and global contractors in U.S. dollars and in crypto. And so, you know, we believe it should be easy to make crypto payroll tax compliant, you know, non-custodial and settle instantly. And be cheap. So that's what we're working on over at Franklin.
Amazing. I am Henry. I am one of the co-founders and CEO of Privy. I started my sort of journey in the decentralized world at a company called Protocol Labs, where I worked on things like IPFS and Filecoin, and sort of set out to see, can we help developers build better products for real people? I think decentralization gets us a lot of things, notably around self-custody and interoperability, which I would argue are its two superpowers. But it comes at a cost of being able to build personalized, customized product experiences that are really, really engaging. So at Privy, we're basically building ways of connecting apps to real people. It is one library to connect all of your users to an app, whether they are an absolute crypto OG with 15 wallets across 8 providers, or whether they've never heard of a wallet and they mostly just want to get value out of your product. So we build one library so that as a developer, you can onboard users in this way and treat them the same, whether they're coming in with MetaMask or an embedded wallet.
Superb. Thank you, guys. Myself, Nirvik, I'll be the host for this particular topic that we have today, that is interoperable feature with OpenStack. OpenStack has made strides in past 1 or 2 months. Major protocols and companies or projects in the space have been using OpenStack to build their own chain. And we'll deep dive into it in this particular topic. And obviously, the interoperable future of aligning with the OpenStack, that's what we are observing right now. And starting with the first question, what is if you can go into a little significance of interoperability in this in Web3 ecosystem, if you can give you an overview, right? And please, guys, feel free to take the, you know, accordingly, whoever want to speak first. But we want to get into first question, that is significance of interoperability in the ecosystem at large, like Web3, and then also OP stack ecosystem as well.
Maybe I'll jump in, I guess, to kick things off and talk a little bit about the role of interoperability in our own work at Privy. I think, as I mentioned, that our worldview is we are probably not decentralization maxi. We don't come to this space with the approach of anything that can be decentralized should be decentralized. And maybe this is a bit of scar tissue that I have from working on, as it were, consensus algorithms and decentralized networks for a number of years. Like, decentralization has a real cost, and those costs will go down as systems scale. But I think there is a sort of question of, you know, what are the privacy implications? What are the sort of product benefits of a decentralized stack? And this is where, you know, I go back to my point. There are really two superpowers that decentralization gets us. One is self-custody. As a user, I really control my assets. I have true ownership over things in the digital world in a way that was impossible until now. And that means I can't get deplatformed. That means I have a right to exit any given system, along with the sort of contextual data and assets that made it powerful in the first place. The second superpower is sort of the flip side of the coin, and that's interoperability. These assets have meaning across product surfaces, across apps, across protocols. And so I think this is where you have the magic of a product like Uniswap, just as an example, which is any given asset, an ERC-20, for example, that is created in Alpha Land has value in Bravo land because you're able to swap it or you're able to bridge it across these things. And so obviously, as we start looking at scalability in this space, and as we start looking at L2s and how do we build better product experiences where transaction times are faster, where transaction fees are cheaper, and where we can start to have consumer experiences in Web3, then the question is, how do we maintain interoperability of assets in that world, not only across chains, but also across apps? And so I think that's a huge part of what we're thinking about, notably with embedded wallets as a part of the tool set that builders should have in this space, is how do we ensure that if a wallet exists sort of sitting flush within an application, we are able to make it that a user coming in to crypto for the first time is able to carry their assets with them from their first experience in application A to their second experience in application B. And obviously that has a number of sort of privacy and security questions around it, which makes it a super interesting, both technical and UX problem.
Yeah, I'll top off on that. I think at Franklin as well, of the group here, we're probably the least infrastructure focused as you know, a consumer product and a business product. What we're primarily thinking about is what the consumer experience looks like. And consumer products need streamlined infrastructure in order to work synchronously. And so when you have a fragmented technical space, there's inherently a fragmented product space. And so we've seen that in the history of crypto, and it's resolved itself in some places. But we also see it still where across layer ones, you know, you have to go to a new layer one, even if you're not a novice in the space and somebody who's been here for a while, if you have to set up a new wallet just to interact with that chain, it's siloed, and that's just a really bad experience. And so increasing interoperability on the technical level will allow us to create products that are more seamless for the consumer so that we can get to a point where they don't even necessarily need to be aware of exactly what that technical stack and infrastructure looks like. When you go to a store today and you can swipe any of your credit cards, you know, you might be aware of which credit card you're pulling out, but you aren't thinking about the network that that money is then moving on in the back end to get to the vendor's bank account. And so crypto needs to strive for something similar. And I'm sure we'll dive more into kind of the optimism stack and what they're doing with Superchain. But I think that is really going to make a big difference. And to Henry's point about managing the scale of centralization to decentralization, when you look at the potential consolidation around L2 designs and where you have something like OP stack, where suddenly a bunch of different L2s can have the same technical stack, well, you know, maybe there's would end up being less decentralization in innovation of what L2s are looking like as more companies consolidate around that stack. Having that stack be consistent has a whole suite of benefits from the developer side all the way up to the product side and inherently the consumers at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think, Eric, Henry, those are absolutely strong points. I 100% agree with those. I think the only two cents I have to add here, I think both Henry and Eric covered almost like entirely my feelings. The only two cents I have to add here is one big benefit about the whole kind of space so far, or like why we've been able to accelerate in phases like DeFi Summer and so on, was due to composability. In like, it's already pretty hard to build stuff, right? So if I am building, let's say, you know, something that's that needs, you know, like a particular protocol, and that protocol is not on my chain, today in this world, it's not possible that, you know, I can build on like whatever chain I want. There is like an inherent lack of cross-chain composability. I think it's a pretty bad world where projects building on Arbitrum cannot compose with projects building on Optimism and projects building on Polygon. I think it's over and all kind of like loss in efficiency, loss in composability. Like, you know, we definitely can't imagine a world where, you know, you want to call an API, but if that API is on AWS, you can't work with it, right? It's a pretty sad world to be in. So I think, yeah, that's why I'm personally excited about cross L2 communication.
One thing I'll jump in with real quick is you know, it's really interesting to me. Obviously, we are colored by the audience we serve. We're building very crypto-native apps, but that are building for a more mainstream audience, or one that may be less of a sort of technical expert in a way that I think a lot of the, for example, DeFi users are, Like, if you're thinking about gas optimization, I would argue you're already a huge expert in the space. But I think this question of, I see two versions of this interop question. And for what it's worth, you know, my take is this is all playing out in real time. It's so exciting because we get to build it. And, you know, I think we have to strive to not be religious about this, but to try and figure out what are the best user experiences we can build by listening to what people are enjoying and what people are having fun with and then building it. But I think the two versions of this question that I'm seeing out in the real world today is, should users have multiple wallets? And, you know, if you have multiple wallets, even wallets per app, doesn't that break interoperability? Because then you're sort of, you know, leaving a trail of like dust and assets kind of everywhere. And obviously, I think, you know, as somebody who has multiple wallets intentionally for privacy purposes, I think it's a really nuanced question. How much should we basically force users to have a single wallet versus many, as well as part of how the AA stack is built up? And then the second one is, should chains be part of the product story? Meaning as a user, should I know if I'm on OP mainnet or if I'm on Base or if I'm on Arbitrum, or should that just be abstracted away? And in that case, I guess, you know, today I am seeing developers picking their chains based not just on technical considerations, but I would argue based on marketing considerations. You know, I'm feeling like I'm kind of like an OP person myself, or I'm feeling like I'm kind of an Arbitrum person myself. And so I guess I kind of wonder, how does this play out as, you know, probably the technical merits of relative chains and the ecosystems, notably around on-ramps, and this is probably something that Socket can talk about really well, but we're seeing a ton of friction in on-ramping assets to various chains. Like, how does that developer decision around the chain end up impacting users? Should a user know that they are holding on to some base ETH or some OP ETH, or should that be all completely abstracted away from them? Again, I think it's going to be very, very app dependent, but these are like huge questions that I think we're going to see play out in the next couple.
Yeah, I think my answer to that is you shouldn't have to know. I think I do agree, as somebody who's technical in the space, and you know, we all know some of the culture of the teams and the different companies that are operating in our space, and even the activities that are happening on some of these different L2s, it creates a culture, and that culture is a very fun thing to be a part of and builds a brand around it. So for us right now, it makes sense to maybe have some brand alignment, whether that's because you enjoy the communities that exist in those spaces today, or because you enjoy the developer experience with that, whatever that might look like. But to your point, I think if you even know that there are multiple L2 chains, or you even know what an L2 is, you're already more native to this space than 95%, if not more, of the users that eventually should be in this space. And so even myself, I don't want to know where my ETH is sitting when I'm interacting with my product. Ideally, I know that, you know, I have a great wallet, you know, maybe hosted with, you know, or provided by Privy, that abstracts all that away. And when I go from page to page in my browser, just natively, I'm able to interact with these apps and make payments or transfer funds or do whatever it might be without needing to worry about, okay, well, you know, even if it's seamless within the wallet, I now need to move my base ETH to Polygon so that I can interact with something there.
I'm coming in hot, less so because I disagree with you, Eric. I mostly completely agree, but more so because I think it's more fun to have Twitter spaces where people debate. So I'm gonna take an argument I don't know that I necessarily like completely subscribe to, but that I do think has a lot of merit, which is, you're right that, you know, 99% of the eventual people that we hope to serve may not know what an L2 is. But I also think that like 99% of the people currently using crypto know and really care what an L2 is. And so how do we bridge that gap between the people that are in crypto? Like, you know, the easiest way to build a mainstream crypto app is to basically build a Web2 app and just add some signatures somewhere in there where, like, you know, the developer owns all the keys and is signing on behalf of users, and you've kind of lost the entire point of crypto. You've lost self-custody, you've lost interoperability. And so in a sense, I think that tension is super, super healthy, which is crypto native products and crypto native mindsets have to kind of teach us where the space will go, because otherwise I think there's just such a strong gravity well towards centralization and building centralized product experiences. And so I guess my question is like, how do we bridge that gap between keeping existing crypto users empowered where they can know which chain they're on and they can make those decisions, and not losing out new users? I guess I, I kind of, you know, my view today is some version of a progressive like framework where you start off and a lot of things are abstracted away from you, but you can kind of peel these interfaces and these abstractions to get back towards like the sort of prosumer type interaction, which we, I think, all have today, where I'm setting gas fees and so on. And this is where, like, you know, products like Rainbow have done such a good job of this in the wallet space, in starting to basically open this up in a way where more users can engage with these products without losing that level of control. But I guess I'm kind of curious, and I worry that if we abstract too many things away, we'll end up losing part of what makes crypto special. So I guess, you know, in the interim, maybe network selection is a good tap to have in an app. I don't know.
Yeah, I think more towards that, right? Like, it almost does matter where your asset lies. You know, you don't want your asset to be on some like insecure chain that, you know, once you get to withdrawing it, you can't do it. So there's like this extreme version of it where, I mean, like all things while building products, right? Things are nuanced. So they're like, we probably shouldn't abstract everything away, and we probably shouldn't be in the world that we are in right now. I think the real future is like somewhere in the middle, that all of us have to kind of experiment and iterate and to kind of, you know, like find the good spot. I think the progressive idea is like a good one. How is it working, Henry, for you, or like, you know, some of the products that probably you know of who are trying this like progressive strategy of like peeling off, things?
I think it's still super early days, but I'm getting super encouraged. You know, two of the metrics that we track in-house is how many people who start with an embedded wallet end up getting a third-party wallet, so a consumer wallet. And then conversely, how many people with a consumer wallet end up choosing to also get an embedded wallet. And, you know, the data is hyper-skewed for us because obviously a lot of this depends on how the developer or customer ends up building out their experience. But I think, you know, we have a very sort of, this is in black and white, like, you know, wallets are both metro cards and bank vaults. And sometimes you need a metro card and sometimes you need a bank vault. And it's normal that the form factor and the defaults on both of these experiences be different. But I would argue it's going like quite well. And I would actually argue that I've been super impressed with how open-minded a lot of, you know, sort of crypto native citizens are with the idea that there are new interaction types that they can play with. I was going to reverse the question and then I'll shut up. But like, I think, you know, one of the things that is going to make sort of networks a native part of the experience, a reality for us over the next couple of years, is really the work that Socket is doing, in my opinion. Like, I think basically having to deal with cross-chain assets is such a pain in the ass for a user. I immediately sent mainnet ETH to my account and was like, fuck, it's stuck there now. How do I get it back? And so obviously this is where, you know, early iterations of what like interoperable tools that feel more native can look like is like, you know, popping out your wallet and exporting your keys. But I think basically until we have better bridging experiences, we are stuck in a multi-network world. And I guess maybe the fear is unless good bridging comes about, actually what we're going to see is maybe less competition in the L2 space because there's such network effects to asset bridging. As more mainstream users come on, you know, if I have to pick which chain I'm going to build on, I'm going to build it on the chain that has the most end users, because the core point of like crypto friction today is fiat on-ramps and asset bridging. And so if I've already got a captive audience that has, you know, some base ETH or some OP ETH, it is going to make my journey as a builder so much easier from the get-go. So I think Socket is building probably one of the most important parts of this story, because until we have good bridging, these are all going to be like hyper-segregated networks.
Superb. I think that's a great start to the overall conversation. I have 2 points to contribute to this conversation. Obviously, I think we have great minds here talking about this conversation. But I think at the end, user perspective, most of the user today, like obviously are crypto native. But if you talk about the majority of the user base that is sitting out there, which doesn't even know about Web3, crypto, or blockchains today, they don't even know what chains are, right? So I think for them, if it's like abstracted and they don't even know what they're interacting with, although there has to be some security layer that could probably manage it, or there has to be some validation where they can see that their crypto assets are secure, I think that validation is probably required for these end users. But otherwise, these end users don't even know what are chains and what they're interacting with. So if you take an example of what Grab did recently with Polygon, I think that was pretty interesting because Grab has such a huge user base, which now Grab has this wallet, and now they can essentially use this and they can interact with this wallet. But when you go in detail, you know that okay, Polygon is there at the behind, but and they can probably have more options also. But at the end, the user shouldn't or probably could probably explore more and get more information. But at the front, I think it should be abstracted away. Like on the UI, when I get started, I shouldn't probably even know which chain I'm interacting with. For him, the most important thing is the assets and are those assets secure or not. I think a lot of things in terms of tooling and developer-related stuff needs to be done before we reach to that point. I think we are still very far from that. And I think Socket, Privy, because you guys are involved in that space, because Privy comes in from the wallet space and then Socket comes in from the bridging space. So I think you guys are probably at the core of it, where, you know, how we can abstract it away. And that leads me to the second question, but I would like to, Henry, as you wanted to speak, please feel free and, you know, unmute yourself and if you want to add any comments over here.
Yeah, for sure. And I have a question for Eric after, because I, you know, the one that maybe I'm being a little facetious, but the people who I see as really benefiting from a multi-chain world, maybe folks who are doing crypto accounting and trying to make sense of this mess that we've created. So I'm super excited to kind of see how this is playing out in your world as well, because obviously I think this is a hugely important question. The question I was just going to ask is, you know, from a developer standpoint, I talked to folks who were building an L2 the other day, and it was a very gaming focused L2. And I was asking them how they were building it, and they mentioned basically that they were building likely an OP stack L2 using Caldera, and then using a given account abstraction layer to like run their 4337 strategy. And I was just so impressed by how far we've come. Like building an L2 has become like, I won't say easy, I haven't done it, but it seems like there's just a lot of off the shelf tooling that kind of allows you to spin up and launch your own L2. And so, you know, you could imagine a system where like you have L2 seasons, like every month I'm going to launch a new L2 and I'm going to roll users up from one L2 to another. I don't know why you would do that, but it's technically feasible now, which I don't think it was like, you know, 6 months ago or 9 months ago. I guess maybe my question is, I think, you know, there's this famous crypto piece called like the FAT protocol thesis, which is value is going to accrue at the protocol layer rather than at the app layer in crypto. And unfortunately, I think that piece has done a ton of damage to how people have built, because we've all been building protocols for the past like, you know, 5 years, 10 years, as opposed to building products and consumer apps. I guess my question is like, when should people build an L2? Like, if I've got a menu of options right now across the space with Polygon, with you know, Base, with Optimism and Arbitrum and all of the others out there, what should be the trigger for me as a developer to say, you know what, like, I need to build my own? And to what extent basically are we L1 wars at the L2 layer? And so I guess I don't have a good answer to this, but it's like, if you look at a new L2 being spun up, like, what are the things that you're looking for to make sense of whether this is a worthwhile technical endeavor or whether this is just like, you know, the XKCD meme of what's the best way to solve for like multiple standards? I'll build my own meta standard and then you've just built the 15 standard. I don't know if my question tracks, but I do wonder about it.
Yeah, I wonder about that similarly when we consider how the L2 space has evolved. You know, we have seen a lot of these alt L1s now considering or have transitioned to be L2s on the Ethereum ecosystem. And then looking at the work that Optimism is doing with Superchain and this concept of creating a system of L2s where, you know, you have a bunch of chains providing more and more compute. They're using the same data availability layer, whether that be the L1 or support data availability through something with Plasma. And then they build in additional functionality with, you know, making bridging easier and allowing atomic transactions across Optimism chains that are being synced to their Superchain. like all of a sudden you have an L2 that might be able to do something that these other L2s standalone can't do. And there could be consolidation around that. I also think that looking at layer twos, layer threes, all these different layers is you have like the generalized layer twos, right? You have Optimism, Arbitrum doing, you know, that can do all these things. They aren't specialized to a specific application experience. And so that's where I ask myself, okay, if I'm a company and I want to roll out a layer two, does it make sense for me to roll out a generalized layer two? Like my instinct says no, but maybe there's a layer two that you can construct, you know, that has trade-offs that are right for your application, whether it's, you know, throughput or security, whatever that looks like. But I do, like my sense tells me that while all of a sudden we have this capacity to spin up and spin down L2s with ease relative to what it was in the past, that the generalized L2 space would likely see a similar consolidation. And that's also just due to things like dev tooling, right? It's when dev tooling becomes consistent across chains, it's a lot easier to build applications and to iterate and to work on your new ideas. And if all of a sudden, you know, I've been working on Optimism, I know how to optimize my code on Optimism so that I'm bundling it well and not taking up a bunch of call data on the L1, then moving over to Arbitrum or a different new L2 that was spun out by some company using a non-OP stack is going to be challenging for me. So I don't know, I guess that's kind of my brain dump on the thought, but I've had similar questions around that.
Maybe one idea that is worth toying with is, and sorry, I'm going to start speaking less as well. I apologize. I'll throw out the idea and then I'll shut up. But one idea that's worth maybe thinking about is like, maybe there are two kinds of apps in crypto. There's like meta apps and non-meta apps. Meta apps are ones that are sort of aware of the crypto meta and of the fact that we are operating on like these layers of decentralization. And so, for example, all of DeFi you could consider as a meta app because DeFi intrinsically makes use of the split nature for arbitrage or trading. And then non-meta apps might be an app like Frentech, which should pick an ecosystem and then can play within it. And maybe if you know, you get more DeFi functionality within Frentech, maybe that changes. But if you start looking at the world as like these meta apps and these non-meta apps, then it becomes quite interesting to understand what is the right tooling for you as a developer. I was at the ETH Global Hackathon that last weekend, and a lot of people were building out ways to do cross-chain deployment of smart contracts. So I deploy once and I'm able to manage my keys or manage my contract across like five chains. And that's like hyper useful for a meta app and for anything, say, touching DeFi or touching like other parts of crypto aware infrastructure. But for a non-meta app, it's completely useless, right? I'd much rather have the simpler tooling of just deploying on one chain and managing that, in which case bridging is super, super useful. So I don't know, first time I think about it, but maybe there you're going to start seeing this split nature of apps that are not chain aware and apps that are chain aware. And the right tooling for them is either sort of interoperable native tooling versus like, say, bridging. And we're going to need like both to become like super, super good, because the reality is we can't just strand users within a chain. In which case we've just made the problem way worse.
Yeah, I think I can kind of share like a perspective on this from the economic angle, which I think is like super important, because the reason these L2s exist is because we want cheaper fees, right? The economic angle is the more you share your machine with other applications, the more expensive it gets. So if you're building something that needs to compose with other protocols that, you know, like it's essential for, you know, for your application to work that, you know, all of these other like 2-3 protocols also need to exist on the same chain, then you will pay the higher costs and, you know, kind of share a machine with them. But otherwise, the L2 fees and the L2 congestion is going to force you to build your own rollup so that you can kind of stay away from the L2 congestion that's, you know, kind of being generated on this generic rollup. And you only pay for the L1 costs. So I think from an economics perspective, it looks like we kind of see this like natural evolution of these ecosystems form. Ecosystems based on composability. So if you're building a DeFi protocol that uses Aave and a bunch of like, you know, other like swapping lending protocols, there will be like a DeFi bubble. And people in the DeFi world will stick there. They'll pay the higher fees because they need the synchronous composability. There will be an NFT bubble. And all of these other applications that don't come, that don't need other applications that are like, you know, vertically integrated, that are independent, they'll kind of move out to their own kind of L2. We're kind of seeing this in action with things like Evo, which is like an options protocol. It does not really kind of depend on anything else. So they launched their own rollup. Versus we had things like Lyra, which is also an options protocol, but built on synthetics. And hence it was sharing a chain with synthetics. Yeah, that's my perspective from like talking to some people.
Maybe you see the same sort of progressive workflows, I guess, on both chains and wallets, which is to say, maybe you've got, you know, these app specific wallets, which again, I don't think is the end state for the space at all. I think interoperability is absolutely essential, but it comes with massive privacy and security trade-offs. So it has to be done thoughtfully. But maybe you see these wallets that people start in an app and then can sort of move very easily their assets into sort of this multi-app world. And maybe the same thing is true for chains, which is if what you're saying is true, and just the cost of having an interoperable, like at a chain level app is too high, then maybe most applications are going to do a version of their own rollups. And I'm hearing less of this app chain, I guess, meme in the market these days, but maybe every application has its own chain. And then there's a moment basically where you have to sort of jump into the next chain over once you've sort of graduated to a given point of usage. And so maybe we're moving from, you know, on the one side, you have like walled gardens, which we can call Web2. On the other side, you've got like, you know, the Mad Max desert that we all live in right now, where, you know, everybody's trying to like steal from you on the web. And maybe there's this like somewhere in between, which is like these gardens with like hedges that you can peer over. And like you have really good connectors between the gardens, so you can jump from one garden into another really easily. But most people's starter experiences are going to be within a sort of hedge garden rather than in the desert itself. I don't know if that analogy strikes, but.
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting. I think a side thought to all of this is that with the user experience, depending on how much you do or don't know and how much control you want to have over which chain you might be operating on, one thing that comes to mind is, you know, how do you know the underlying security of these different chains, right? So one benefit of having a bunch of chains on the same stack, let's just call it OP stack, since that's what we're talking about a little bit, is that you generally have an understanding of the security of the system you're operating on, even if you're moving between chains and you're doing it yourself or it's happening automatically on the back end just because that's how the app is orchestrating things. But then if you're in a scenario where they aren't necessarily the same and the app is orchestrating your funds and all of a sudden your funds exist on a chain that doesn't have the same security standards that you're used to or don't uphold the same ones, you could get yourself into maybe a sticky situation or you could imagine a world in which in the lengthy terms and conditions, there's some approval essentially for saying like, we're going to orchestrate your funds across these different chains. And you essentially give us approval to do so and are accepting the underlying security of those chains as they are. So kind of taking a security perspective on all of this as well is a big part of interoperability is, you know, interoperability and your security standard as well.
I wonder if anybody's ever seen chain phishing. Like, you know, we have app phishing, obviously, and we have website phishing on the web. But like, isn't it a matter of time before, like, obviously customer education is so tricky. Isn't it a matter of time before I try to phish you by having you connect to like my, you know, OPP chain that you think is the actual OP chain. And I'm going to basically rug you by creating a fake chain, by, you know, enforcing some asset name that looks familiar and by having the interfaces that users have to self-custody, which is to say wallets, not do a good enough job of checking the underlying sort of RPC network that they're connecting to or something like that. I don't know that I've seen this in the wild, but I guess if this keeps playing out and you get all of these rollups, it supposedly would only be a matter of time before you start to see these fake chains appear to try and rug users.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that happen yet, but I think account abstraction fixes it. People sign signatures without really kind of verifying the data. So far, I think wallets used to kind of take it upon themselves to kind of make sure the chain ID matches the requests. But I think in this account abstracted world that you're going towards, these things can just kind of request signatures for like whatever chain ID. And if the user does not kind of make sure it's correct, something like this could happen.
I'm going to disagree, I guess. I think account abstraction only fixes this, assuming it's got good interfaces to the end user. Like, I see myself clicking on terms and conditions on the web, and the reality is, like, I basically say yes to everything because I don't want to read through that shit. And, like, basically, if the interface for, like, account abstraction is, you know, say yes and I won't ask again, I'm absolutely going to say yes and potentially connect to the wrong chain or something. So I don't disagree with you in principle. But I think account abstraction only fixes this, assuming the sort of on-ramp to a given, say, connection between a smart account and a chain is done in such a way that the user is properly informed and is able to consent at a granular enough level. And so I think this question of, like, how much friction do you push, intentionally push onto the user is such a complicated one. Because if you try to remove all the friction, you're opening up your users to getting attacked in this way. So yeah, I'm super excited about account abstraction. I do think that there is a gap today in the UX of account abstraction.
Yeah, I think I 100% agree. But I was like kind of mostly pointing out the implementation of account abstraction, right? So I think wallets are the sticky apps, right? And like wallets that people trust, I don't think they would want to kind of switch unless there's like a big enough reason. That's one of the reasons why we have pretty good wallets. Today, they are becoming better every day, but still, a big amount of people use MetaMask. Maybe it's also because of the token, but I think wallets kind of control the human interface. And once a human is used to it, he feels like secure, he feels, that product has kind of hit the right abstraction and like complexity percentage, I think it's like really hard to convince people to kind of move away. So I think like we really need some good wallets in the space that kind of do a good job there.
Yeah, I think I fairly agree with above Henry and Eric. Right, I think the only risk that I see is that these scams are getting very smart every day. Right, so they'll probably just go an extra mile and probably build a wallet, and it just replicates the user experience of an existing wallet. And I think these attack vectors or probably these scams will get stronger as we progress. I think the existing teams working in the space might have to go an extra mile to secure their users or these account these addresses, right? Because every person can probably have 10, 20 addresses, right? So we might have to as an ecosystem might have to probably put an extra effort in terms of how we can secure these users, because otherwise, these scams are getting pretty much smart every day and learning from their failures and whatever they're learning, right? But essentially, I agree that, it could be probably a risk when you abstract away everything, but I think at the back, you can probably have more details and stuff like that. And we people who are in the ecosystem might have a role to play in that, where we can secure the user experience and how we can probably make it safer.
No, I was just going to say, I think your point is really right. And I think, I hate to make talking too much about scams and crypto to me feels a little bit tired. There's so much exciting stuff happening in this space. And I think the scams are really just an unfortunate part of how early the stack is along. But in this case, I think it's hyper relevant because, arguably, there's real tension between interoperability and security. Like, the reason why you're not getting scammed as much in centralized systems is that they're absolutely not open to third parties coming in with like divergent incentives. And so it's not to say that there aren't security issues with centralized infrastructure, but it is to say that by like literally limiting everyone's power, centralized infrastructure limits scammers' power as well. And so, I think the more interoperable the space, the easier it is for people who have divergent incentives to attack your user. And so, I think maybe one version of this is flash loans. Flash loans to me are not a scam. They're a feature, not a bug, but they're in this gray area, in my opinion, of is this part of the game or is this the game being broken? And I would argue that, pure scams are just a bug, not a feature, but sometimes there's this space in between where they're hard to tell apart. And so I think, the reality is if you want to build something interoperable, you're letting in some of the bad along with the good. And for that matter, what you think of as bad and good is probably not what I think of as bad and good. And so we're not going to agree anyways. So yeah, I think it's a super, super important topic.
Superb, superb. Thank you, Andre. We are actually running short of time. We had at least three more questions to ask that we had in our that I have in front of me. But I think this conversation entirely is pretty interesting that we couldn't even dive into those questions. But one of them that came up from this conversation itself is when it comes to, you know, developers building in cross-chain space. And when you consider OP stack, because I think we talked about different, you know, L2s also and L1s as well. And you have Arbitrum, which is pretty heavy in DeFi space. You have OP stack, general purpose, but we are seeing a lot of these social networks. Farcaster pretty recently moved to OP stack. So there is like when, you know, these developers start building in this cross-chain space, what does OP stack has to offer in terms of opportunity or benefits? And in terms of obviously, you know, probably building an app or maybe just running their own sort of L2, what are the opportunities for the builders and what could be some benefits of OP stack?
I can take a stab at it. I'm no expert in the OP stack, but have been diving into it. I think we've touched on it on a surface level. I'm not sure how much deeper I can get, but I think that where it really benefits is one, what Henry already mentioned, the ability to even just spin up an L2. It opens up a massive design space that previously was very hard to penetrate. And so the fact that somebody could play around with, oh, what if I had an L2? What could I do here? Now you can go explore that in a much easier way. So I think from one, just getting started, that's a huge benefit to developers. I think that there are also like interesting things with how they're using their superchain. I think like I would love to play around if I had an extra 10 hours in the day to play around with cross-chain atomic transactions through the OP stack, which I don't think is actually in place yet, but it's on their roadmap with superchain. And I think the things that you could do with that would be really interesting where, you know, back to our walled gardens, you could theoretically have some of these walled gardens, but in a transaction, you could hop between them. And if in one of them you have an issue, you don't have to worry about cleaning up afterwards because it all just rolls back. And so I think that also creates a design space that has been really hard to penetrate at this point in time is, you know, being able to move funds cross-chain in an atomic way where it all rolls back. So those are the two thoughts that immediately come to mind and maybe spurs the discussion on around a little bit.
I think one of the things OP stack kind of gives out of the box is this bridge to Ethereum. And I think it's pretty powerful for people building like cross-chain stuff because you have this sense of, you know, like the biggest problem with kind of launching your own chain is like, how do you get assets on that particular chain? With OP stack, at least, you know for sure that, you know, if you launch an app roll-up, any asset on ETH L1 can move to your OP stack chain, right? So at least like the bridging problem to like a certain extent is solved for you. It's nowhere near what you need in the end state, but at least like, you know, you can get started, your users can start moving there, people can start using your protocol and stuff like that. So I think like just having that one strong messaging protocol connecting to ETH L1, I think that's like super important.
Henry, would you like to add some points here?
I'm interested in, I'm not so much building as giving another version of an answer. I'm very interested in the governance around the OP stack. And I think here the work that Base has done is particularly interesting. Like I definitely see the point for Base in having basically a fork in that they are bound as a public company in the US by like very different compliance standards and other regulatory requirements than anyone else. And so being able to say, we're ultimately going to control this fork. And by the way, let it be known, I know extraordinarily little about this. So I would check my, you know, DYR in this case, because I am too uninformed. But my assumption as to what's happening is control over this enables folks who want to partake in decentralized ecosystems to have a little bit more control over the environments that they sit in and still contribute back to sort of the mothership in a useful way. And so I felt like the entire set of interactions I've seen between Base and OP is super, super positive in kind of creating maybe a model for more traditional institutions to interact with decentralized systems. And, you know, it reminds me a lot of the old or older ways in which open source has worked and like sort of open source contribution models and software generally work, where I can sort of have, you know, Microsoft be the biggest contributor to my project and actually do a really good job of contributing back to the community in a way that I think we've seen less of from corporations in crypto. We've seen a lot of it from individual contributors, but we've seen a lot of it of like corporations actually sort of taking a protocol, running with it, making it their own, and then contributing back. So that's probably part of the OP stack that I'm most excited about is this parachain and the governance that comes with it, enabling institutions, as it were, to become sort of active participants in crypto.
Yeah, I think that's going to be really interesting. And even just reading further on what OP is doing, how you will all of a sudden be able to have a single governance system for kind of all the OP chains that are transacting through Superchain is a fascinating concept and can streamline probably a lot of things as well, because of course, you know, through social coordination, you get the best outputs when you have the most inputs that are heard. I think that's really interesting. I do think to your point about like Coinbase rolling out their own version of it and the regulatory aspect, you know, previously I worked in the more traditional finance space, and I think that it's definitely going to be the case that whether it's other exchanges or more traditional financial institutions will look towards what Coinbase has done with Base Chain as a way to say, okay, how can we get more involved in this ecosystem in a way where we have more control, or there's still a sense of having more control, even if, you know, that how much control they really have over it differs. I also think a benefit of something with the OP stack is that you can, you know, quickly have semi-decentralized systems that are easier for a corporation to set up with regulated entities without needing to kind of bootstrap, you know, a bunch of decentralized actors supporting their network. And I think that when you get down to brass tacks and look at balance sheets, a lot of these financial institutions won't mind the fact that running their own payment infrastructure layer, they're the ones that are receiving a lot of those transaction fees if they're the ones running the nodes supporting that network. You know, maybe it's not the most like beneficial concept to the space, but it's definitely something that people are thinking about, where all of a sudden, if you're a bank and you have to pay to use Swift, you have to pay to use Fedwire, you have to pay to use all these new modern tools that let you move money really quickly across borders. Well, what if I just spun up a layer one? I, as the company, get most of those transaction fees because the nodes running that network are my organization's nodes or my consortium of networks nodes. You know, you can almost see like the Zelle consortium of banks deciding, hey, let's create a L2. We'll all contribute to validating the nodes on, or validating the transactions by hosting nodes on this L2. And, you know, we'll all get to take a part in the fees on this payment network. So I think that's also something that is going to happen because, I don't know, follow the money a little bit.
Interesting. Thank you, Eric, for that point. I think overall, from end user, and that brings me to the next question also, right? And the important point that Weber, Henry mentioned, and while Eric, you mentioned institutions as well, and I think Henry also agreed to that point. Most of these institutions in the space, they have and they interact with the customers or the users that are still not on some of the blockchains, right? And that brings me to the question, is that how does interoperability, you know, fixes this user experience issues? And also the issue that I see is the ecosystem fragmentation. And what I meant by this is that, you know, some of the applications are living on a chain, and they are part of this walled garden, right? Where, you know, a user on another chain, let's say, for an example, which I feel bad is that Cosmos and Polkadot are such strong ecosystems, but then you see some of these applications which are pretty good in Ethereum ecosystem, but then you see that, you know, the people from different ecosystem cannot interact with these applications and vice versa. So there is some user experience related issues where people cannot interact with these applications, and I think it should be, and I'm sticking with the first point itself, that it can it be abstracted, the overall experience, can it be abstracted? And then how do you deal with this ecosystem fragmentation? Can interoperability solve that today or maybe tomorrow? But do you see there's an opportunity for us to solve this ecosystem fragmentation problem, and also fixing the UX issue where, you know, I don't have to hop onto 10 different chains to interact with the app?
Yeah, it's a great question. My take is it's not going to be like there's no magic bullet here, or silver bullet, I guess is the term. But like complete non-fragmentation really means putting the user in a place. Like you have to pick. You can get non-fragmentation via centralization, and in a decentralized environment, you can get it by pushing users to be in this completely open system. And I think that carries some dangers. And so, you know, unfortunately, I'm going to be a bit of a wet blanket, but I think what matters to me is what are the bridging points? What are the points in which a user makes a decision to move and hop across different stacks with different threat models built in, with different openness built in? And what is the UX in informing that user? You're about to go to a different part of the internet that functions a little bit differently. But I think this idea that we can get like perfect interoperability for free seems to me to just ignore some of the security models that requires. And I think part of what's exciting about Web3 is that, you know, even just networks themselves are not one size fits all. They carry different ideologies within them in the way that consensus works and the way that they are permissionless. And so I basically don't think perfect interoperability should be the goal. I think avoidance of any lock-ins and really smooth bridging experiences with sensical sort of alternatives for users is already such a huge achievement. And I think a perfectly interoperable world looks a lot like the crypto that we have today, which I think has a lot of shortcomings for an average user.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think my initial thought when you posed the question is, you know, kind of what's the relative basis here, right? If you're trying to put all of the internet in one economic place, then, you know, that's way more quote unquote interoperable or all in the same place than it's ever been before. And as it's always been, we're going to have different economic communities for forever. And so echo Henry's point that really the key is streamlining the movement between those economic communities or digital communities that have economic agency so that you as a free user on the internet can go anywhere you want to with an understanding of where you're getting there, where you're going to, how you're getting there, and what the security is. I'll leave it at that for now before going down a rabbit hole.
Vaibhav, would you like to contribute to this? Because I think Socket plays a very important role in this overall situation.
I think interop is kind of like a base infrastructure that's needed. Interop that kind of is fluid, I think is the thing that we need. We don't need like an interop solution that's, you know, pretty much like a Chainlink Oracle. We need something that allows people to evolve as things go along, right? So we need something, if an NFT project wants to do interop and, you know, kind of attract like really, like people are bringing like $10 and, you know, using that to buy 10 NFTs, I think the interop solution should work such that, you know, this project can take some security hit and kind of allow for this and kind of be the undertaker for, you know, like if anything bad happens to the interop project. But I think all in all, interop solution should be like pretty much like the internet. When you click on a website, you don't know 100% if it's a scam or not, or if it's like a legit thing. So I think interop should be that way. We definitely need it. Bridging is a form of interop. And we all know, you know, asset bridging is going to be needed no matter what we do. But yeah, I think my take is pretty much this. interop is needed to do cross L2 cross chain stuff. We shouldn't be imposing one security standard on it, but allow people to kind of reduce security and increase security and other kind of parameters that come with bridging, be it latency, be it cost, and allow people to kind of, you know, choose in this like security, cost, latency trade-off according to whatever application they're building.
Superb. So I think that, we are already past the time that we had dedicated to this space. Overall, I think if any one of you, or maybe all three of you can give a gist of, you know, entire conversation, and probably give your end notes to it. Because I think we are already running out of time. So it would be great because we don't want to keep hold of you guys because you have other things to do as well. So probably if you can give your end notes to this conversation and probably give, a closing note to this overall conversation or space, that would be super awesome. Any of you can probably start and then maybe we can hear your points, all three of you. And then we'll just wrap up this conversation. If anyone from the community has a question, you can drop a message below. You will have a message box. You can see one there. You can drop your question there, or you can join space to ask your question. But we'll keep it short. Weber, Henry, Eric, any one of you would like to probably take up the stage and probably put your end remarks.
Sweet, yeah, I'm happy to quickly go for it. I think all in all, the OP stack kind of enables projects to kind of launch their own kind of rollup to kind of make sure transaction costs kind of remain cheap and they have more control over the product experience for the end user, and interop remains like a big part of the product experience. Whenever you kind of deposit to an application or try to use like a rollup, the whole kind of product journey is like super important, and with OPStack the need of interop only increases from here.
I'll go next. That was awesome. My sum up is, I think we're seeing a lot of exciting developments that are making crypto far more usable and far more accessible. They come at a cost when it comes to interoperability. And we have to make sure that we keep this tension alive, because interoperability is, I would argue, one of two major features that decentralization brings application builders. And so if we give up on it, I think we've given up on a lot of what makes the space actually worth building in. I also think there are no silver bullets. Like, these decisions come with trade-offs. And what we have to keep doing as builders is chip away at how bad these trade-offs are, so that developers and their users have better ways of building in this evolving landscape. So personally, I'm as optimistic as I've been about crypto, because I think we're doing a much and much better job of sort of threading the needle basically between interoperability across the stack and usability within any given segment. But we have to keep pushing. And I think like the debates and the tension that you see play out in communities is very, very healthy to making sure that the space remains vibrant.
Yeah, I think I can close it out by continuing up away from the lowest technical layer. But from a consumer perspective, all of this is going to make the experience a lot better. We didn't get around to it, but the point was brought up of, what does accounting look like for an end user, where you have a bunch of chains that you're accounting across and a bunch of different DeFi standards. And anybody who's done their own taxes in the space knows the pain that that can create. At Franklin, something we look towards is how, both from the technology layer all the way through our consumer-facing product layer, do we make it easy to account for all of those things and have a similar financial experience to our standard financial experience in crypto. And all the things we're seeing at the technology layer are going to bubble up to make those experiences better and better. We're seeing it happen at the L2 layer and the data availability layers. I think also account abstraction, everything that's happening there is, and as that begins to repeat itself across different blockchain ecosystems, is going to create more interoperability between wallets and the different ecosystems that you can interact with. And then the last thought I can kind of leave there is, I think that the way that a lot of wallets are going to be authenticated in our space, we're starting to see similar paradigms in the traditional Web2 space about what that authentication looks like. And so all of a sudden, I think kind of the utopia I like to envision and that gets me excited is the internet, web 2, web 3, like it's just going to become the web. And while it does feel very disparate right now, web 3 is doing a great job of moving itself to a place where it doesn't feel like a separate part of the web, but it's just a part of the overall experience of being a web user.
Superb. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Henry. Thank you, Weber. That brings me to probably the last thing, right? I think it makes it overall very interesting for the accountants, right? So I think everybody on the space will probably, when it comes to interoperable, we'll see how accountants react to that. But pretty interesting conversation, right? I think it makes the overall interoperable future makes it very interesting for developers and for the users, because they can pick and choose what they like at the end. I think the people who would probably not agree to this would be accountants, because they'll have to probably dig deeper and probably adapt to this. But overall, great conversation. Thank you, everyone, for joining in the space and for giving us this insightful, in-depth, understanding of essentially what's happening. And looking forward to connect again in future. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us and bearing up with us in this conversation. And we'll see you next time. Thank you, guys. Thanks a lot.